The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Welcome to 9/11 Freefall. I'm the host, Andy Steele. This week we're joined by Paul Zaremka. He's a professor of economics at the State University of New York at Buffalo. He edited The Hidden History of 9/11, which features a good collection of essays from various scholars. And now he's also written a book titled Key Elements of Social Theory Revolutionized by Marx, and there's a chapter in it where he looks into quote-unquote conspiracies, and of course I put it in the quote-unquotes because as he writes in this chapter, this entire term conspiracy theorist has been used as a weapon against anybody that questions official theories or official narratives in this country and in other countries really too. So Mr. Zaremka, welcome to 9/11 Freefall.
Thank you very much.
So, again, the title of this is Key Elements of Social Theory, Revolutionized by Marx. A lot of it looks into elements that are outside of our scope here. I just want to remind everybody, 1811 Truth is apolitical. I say this to the left and to the right. We're not involved in any of that. We just look at the science, and we look at some of the history, too, on occasion to provide examples when people say, I don't want to look at the science because I just can't believe it could be true. Well, this has been true since the beginning of human history. I want to learn more about you, sir, so please tell us more about yourself and your background.
Yeah, I graduated as an undergraduate from Purdue University, went to the University of Wisconsin in Madison for my PhD in economics. I did what you would call traditional mainstream economics, went to University of California, Berkeley for my initial portion of my career, and then came to Buffalo, where I'm now full professor of economics. I've spent a number of years in one country or another of Europe. About 1977, I moved over from interest in traditional economics to Marxist economics. I don't want to discuss that today because that's not on your agenda, but I'm just being honest with you. That's where I'm coming from. But I do want to say one thing, and that is that I really did not want 9/11 to be captured by either political side, either the left or the right. In other words, this is scientific questions that we're dealing with here. So I cite people of any political persuasion as long as I feel like it's going to contribute to the truth about 9/11 and conspiracies in general. That's all I think I should say at the beginning.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I look at it like a murder investigation. I mean, if you find a dead body at a house, you don't sit there and look at the politics of the murder victim or of the suspects or whoever happens to be mayor of that town. You just investigate the murderer. I love movies, characters just like that, the cops that look past all that stuff and just look at the facts. And I like people in real life, of course, who think that way as well. And it's kind of surreal seeing your phone number and seeing that you're from the University of Buffalo, because I'm from upstate New York, central New York, and it seemed like everybody, when I went to high school, went off to college in the West somewhere. They either went to Buffalo or Rochester, so I feel like we've got a bond in that way. So I could have very easily had you as a professor maybe at one point. If I had gone to a different college, if I had gone to Buffalo instead of Rochester. So I want to hear your 9/11 story. Please tell us your experience on that day, and then how did you begin to question the events as they were told to us?
Well, on that day, I was in my office. My wife calls me on the phone, tells me to go to the TV, and I see what many other people see. Okay, and I don't need to rehearse that because everybody has a similar reaction to that. However, maybe I am who I am, but I was not as shocked as maybe some people were Given my, sort of, let's say, political persuasion at that point, and still is the case, I don't put it past a government to be doing a false flag operation. I just didn't put it past them, okay? But it didn't at all mean that I initially had that reaction. I simply didn't know. And so about 4 months later, Michael Rupert was giving a talk in Toronto, which started, it was about 9/11, but it started with the Kennedy assassination. And he rewound the tape of the Zapruder film about 10 times to try and get the audience conditioned to the fact that what really happened isn't what they're telling you is what happened. And so from there on, I basically said, I want to understand 9/11 seriously. And that meant that for about the next 2 years, I just did my own private internet-based research on 9/11. I mean, anybody who's gotten into 9/11 knows what that feels like. And along the way, maybe in about in the second year of that or a third year of that, I was connecting to other people. We had kind of a listserv, I guess you'd call it that, or at least a whole bunch of people were interacting with each other. And at the same time, I'm an editor, which I forgot to mention before, of Research in Political Economy, which is published out of Europe, but that doesn't matter. It's a hardcover academic publication. And I felt in a strong enough position that if I proposed to that publisher to do a book on 9/11, that there would be no academic censorship in any way whatsoever. In other words, we could do what we wanted. And that indeed turned out to be the case. I mean, so what I did is I proposed the book, and to people on this list, they had other people who connected around, and basically we wound up having a book of about, I can't remember now, maybe about 8 chapters in the hidden history of 9/11. That was published in 2006, and then it was published in a paperback expanded edition in 2008 by Seven Stories Press in New York City, which is known for its independent publications, and also was able to do it now. It's being sold now for like $15, when the initial price of the hardback was like $100 or $120, something like that. So that was a great move forward. So that's where I stood with at that point with research on 9/11, and what's going on with the book right now that you cited, namely the key elements of social theory revolutionized by Marx, is I went back and looked at many other significant events, not just in American history, but in history which could be described as some kind of a false flag or a conspiracy or whatever. And I tried to understand and present to the reader the evidence behind it, not just jumping on, yeah, the Reichstag fire was definitely done by the Nazis, but rather look at the actual evidence. And so I summarized that. Now, is that enough for an opener? Or do you want me to go further?
Well, we are going to go further, and actually I'm going to ask you for about some very specific examples from this chapter that I read here, where you do eventually get into 9/11, but there's other events, as you mentioned, in American history and world history, some we know about in the truth community, some of us may know about, but probably very few of us, because they don't get a lot of coverage, even in the alternative media and alternative history channels here. So let's just jump into it and get started. The first thing I noticed was a story or a narrative here that you laid out about Abraham Lincoln. And he was still only a congressman, but we had a war with Mexico that people, we don't learn a lot about that in this country. We had a war with Mexico. We ended up acquiring Texas as a result of that. But Lincoln had some very serious questions to President Polk about how this war could get started, especially since we had a treaty with Mexico. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, I'm happy you started with that, because that's what I would have started with, because it has more implications than just what Abraham Lincoln did, Abraham Lincoln at that point was a Whig, and the Whigs were opposed more or less to the Polk's party, Democrats, I believe. And so this is before he got into Congress. Basically, the United States, well, one can talk about what actually happened. What seemed to actually happen is that, in fact, the United States crossed a borderline, attacked the Mexicans, and then blamed the Mexicans for attacking, for responding and saying, basically saying that they started it, that they did the first shot on the American side of the border, on the U.S. side of the border, not on the on the Texas side of the border, sorry, rather than on the Mexican side of the border. So it has the exact appearance of a false flag. Lincoln gets to be gets elected to office, and he then goes into Congress and makes many motions, which is asking a very simple question of President Polk, and that is, where is the spot that the war started on? Where do you, this is actually toward the end of the war, but nevertheless, he's still asking these questions. Where is the spot? So basically, he was asking for the truth. Where did this really happen? And that led Lincoln to be called Spotty Lincoln at the time. And actually, it worked against him, because the next time he came up for election, he wasn't elected. That's the very next time that he ran. However, and this is a really important thing here, you have a guy, a congressman, who is doing something like asking questions about 9/11, who, let's say, what was it, a dozen years, 15 years later, about a dozen years later, becomes president of the country. In other words, his integrity actually worked in his favor in the long term, in the long run, even if it didn't in the short run. So I think that's really interesting, that one of our previous presidents actually was doing a serious conspiracy question toward another president of the United States.
Yes, and it's so great to hear that story and this approach that Lincoln took, saying, where is the exact spot where this started? I love specifics. It reminds me of Columbo or something like that, because it really puts people on the spot, not to take that term. Get very literal with it, but it puts President Polk on the spot to explain himself. We've done that so many times with regard to Building 7 and specific questions to congressmen about 9/11, and of course, they do everything they can to avoid it. But here you go. You had a guy who was a U.S. congressman, and it did work into his favor. And, you know, I understand why some people, if they don't have a lot of money, if they're in a job that they have to hold on to, I understand why they compromise. I'm not saying I necessarily agree, but I understand it better. But if you already have money and you're just holding an office in the U.S. government, why compromise? Why would you? Who cares? Like, who cares if you stay being a congressman? Just tell the truth and then let the chips fall where they may, especially if you've already got money sitting for you at home and you don't have to worry about your basic survival needs. Just go forward and tell the truth and have fun doing it.
I think this story needs to be much more widely known in the 9/11 community. Because you have such a popular president named Abraham Lincoln, who everybody's citing favorably these days, doing something that's consistent with what we're doing. I mean, it's a simple example.
And you didn't have a corporate media to the power that it does right now to try to destroy his entire essence, his entire career, like they would now. But, I mean, I think the power of the media is way too strong anyway, and I see them diminishing, even if they still exist, like this empty vessel that's still out there giving you propaganda on the TV. People have lost all faith in all of them. You know, regardless of whatever their political leanings are, I think they've lost faith in both sides of it, because they know that ultimately it's going through this filter where truth is not entirely revealed, and you know, it's just trying to push whatever agenda that network has. Maybe they're all working for the same agenda, too. Maybe it's all a big stage show we're witnessing here. Keep us divided and conquered. Let's get to the main here, because I remember learning about this in high school, and the way they treated it was to say they used this as the pretext for the Spanish-American War. And then they found out years later that it was probably some kind of internal explosion in the boilers on the ship. So they made it seem like the press was just naively going with it, and then we found out the truth later. But that may not necessarily be the case, according to other accounts and interpretations of history that I have seen. So please explain that.
Well, actually, yeah, that's not actually what happened at the time, because one of the things that surprised me when I was looking at the event at the time is actually the business community. I'm not saying all of the business community, but much of the business community was not convinced that the Maine was destroyed by the Spanish. And they were vocal about it. I mean, in the press. And then when Congress set up a committee, the committee actually didn't quite blame the Spanish either, but it didn't exonerate them either. So that allowed the sort of, I would call the yellow press, to keep pushing to get McKinley, I guess, to eventually promote the intervention, but there was a restriction in Congress that we would not actually take over Cuba, and that was kind of a restriction that we would not be so-called an imperialist, but in fact we did become an imperialist because we added the Platt Amendment to their constitution under the demand that we made of them, of the Cubans, after we helped the Cubans win the war against the Spanish. Then the Cubans went to war against the United States, but they didn't succeed. And the eventual conclusion of that was the Platt Amendment, which says that the United States could intervene in Cuba if necessary. And that was something that led to the Cuban Revolution, part of what led to the Cuban Revolution, which occurred in 1959, as you quite surely know.
Right, and a lot of people were in objection to the Spanish-American War and the wars that we fought at that time as we became more and more so imperialist. And I was actually trying to look for a quote from Mark Twain, and I can't find it at the moment, where he outlined some of the things that the American side had done in the Philippines and in Cuba and whatnot, things that would equate to terrorizing the people. And I think it ends in some, with him saying, "I guess that proves we're a world power now," kind of cynically. And so there was a lot
that
of protests.
Sounds like Mark Twain, right? I didn't know that particular quote, but that sounds like him.
Yeah, I'll find it. I'll try to find it later on. But no, there was a lot of people speaking out. Mark Twain, very good social commentator of his time. He didn't just write Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer. He really kept abreast of what was going on. Let's talk about...
You lived in Buffalo for a couple of years. We are kind of proud of that, actually.
I was not aware that he lived in Buffalo. Yep. That is interesting. Yep. I know that McKinley got shot in Buffalo.
Yep, he actually got shot on the same street. It wasn't a street then, but now it's a street where I live. There's a monument on the street to the assassination of McKinley.
I've seen it on video. Somebody made a video about the assassination of McKinley, and they show where it is. I think it's like planted in the grass. There's a little marker there.
Yeah.
It was at the World Exposition there. They had set up an entire tent. So very fascinating stuff, especially since you don't hear much about that assassination. He kind of gets drowned out by the bigger press on Lincoln and Kennedy. Let's get to I don't want to mispronounce it, Mukden or the Manchurian incident.
Yeah, Mukden, I'm not sure either, Mukden or Manchurian Institute. Yeah, that's not well known either, but actually that one apparently was actually established. I mean, it's not one that's in dispute any longer. That's why I don't give it much coverage, but what happened in 1931 is that the Japanese, I'm going to start it by saying they arrived or they came to or somehow got to Manchuria, Mukden particularly, as a Pacific city, and for reasons that are not 100% clear, the military in the city sets up a false, it is a false flag, but I'm going to qualify it in a minute, sets up a false flag of blaming the Chinese for the Manchurians for attacking, or Chinese to, for attacking the railroad that went into the city. And then that led to the Japanese government declaring war on Manchuria, and that basically led to World War II in Asia. Not in Europe, of course, that happens later, but this is the Asian version, or the portion of World War II. Now, what's kind of interesting about that particular incident is that the railroad track was damaged, but it was repaired within a couple of hours, and trains went over it within a short period of time, 2 or 3 hours, 4 hours after the incident. Nobody was killed. So to say that it actually is a false flag is almost ridiculous. I mean, it was such a totally minor thing. Nobody was hurt. The damage was corrected quickly. To even call it a big deal, I mean, it's not a big deal. So I kind of like to refer to it as a ruse of war rather than a false flag, because false flag, for me at least, ought to be more serious than this particular incident. But it did lead to the Japanese invasion of China.
Exactly, and we are basically seeing right now, and the reason that I'm going over all this today, and I want to highlight this for the audience, is that I've heard so many people throughout, especially the past couple of weeks, say, oh, I don't want to hear about this conspiracy stuff. I just can't believe it's true. I've been hearing it a lot in the past couple of weeks regarding certain recent events, but all I've been hearing it endlessly since I woke up to 9/11. And it shows how ignorant the general public can be when it comes to history, because quote-unquote conspiracy and intrigue and deception, it is how governments have run since the beginning of man. I mean, all the way back to Rome, Egypt, ancient times. This is a normal part of how business is done. We don't realize that until we wake up to 9/11, a lot of us, because we get this sort of Saturday morning cartoon version of history. We see these shows where there's some conspiracy, quote-unquote, going on, and then all the hero has to do is get it to the president or get it to the press, and it goes out over the airwaves, and everybody wakes up, and it's all over in 5 minutes. That's not how reality works, because, again, darkness and intrigue is a normal part of doing business for any government. This is not just picking on America here.
But let me make a comment here. It's not just government. I mean, there's private conspiracy.
Exactly.
And we have lots of laws. I mean, when somebody talks to me about conspiracy theory, here's how I reacted to them. I said, there is laws on the books about conspiracies. Nobody denies that there are conspiracies. Nobody denies it, okay? So the only question now becomes this specific incident in which you're talking about. And yes, it's true that when you initially have hear about it, you might have a theory, and that's fair enough. Why can't people have theories? So people have a theory of that there is a conspiracy. Okay, you can say I'm not I don't think it's true, but you can say that George Bush had a conspiracy of 19 people engaging in a terrorist event against the United States. Well, that's his theory. The question is whether it's correct or not. So then you get to the issue about evidence, and that's where, of course, I got involved in 9/11 and other people who were involved and find out the evidence doesn't support George W. Bush's theory. So I don't really mind people saying I'm a conspiracy theorist. It still falls down to the issue about the truth of the matter. And even the issue of truth is not absolute, okay? It's getting the best available evidence and not being afraid of the answers, even if it goes against what you had believed ahead of time. So that's why in the chapter in the book, I go through other cases like the Reichstag fire, like Gliwice, that started World War II in Europe. I went through these other cases to look at the actual evidence, trying to do it unbiased. Just, is it really true that the Nazis instituted the Reichstag fire, or is it not? What is the actual evidence? You know, so the other portions of that chapter that you're looking at is my attempt to look in an unbiased way against other events that have happened. And, of course, there's major one, and that is, of course, even forgetting about Kennedy, because, I mean, I'm totally convinced about that Lee Harvey Oswald, that it was a government job, not Lee Harvey Oswald. But even forgetting about that, the Martin Luther King Jr. case is more dramatic than that, because we had a trial in 1999 in which the jury convicted the government of conspiracy. I mean, it's right there. It's right in the trial evidence. The fact that the government prohibited or kept people from covering it doesn't mean it didn't happen. It did happen. There was a trial. The government was convicted of being part of a conspiracy to kill Martin Luther King, period. That's really dramatic. I mean, you had a jury trial.
Right. And, I mean, the notion that powerful people, or even not powerful people, that people get together and plot things is not that crazy of a notion. But
no.
The media has to make you think that it is. They have to stop, in particular when it comes to 9/11. We'll use that as an example. They have to stop the thought process at that stage, because if it gets into a debate about the evidence, they know they are done for. Because all, yeah. I mean, I've always taken the position, even with people that don't like what I'm talking about, I say, what's the harm in just having a new investigation? You know, testing the dust samples for explosives, which NIST
yeah.
failed to do.
Right.
I mean, we spent all so much money on Clinton's impeachment, but we don't want to look into
right.
the big mass murder of 9/11 and just do these extra steps and correct incorrect information. Of course, that's the reasonable position to take. Of course what I'm saying is reasonable, but they don't want people to get to hear that. They want to just cut them off mentally at the knees by just thinking that the notion that, you know, the media is lying to us, the government lies to us, that people never get together and plot devious things, horrible things. We want them to think that that is just out of bounds.
Well, I just want to make one other comment, and now we have a problem. I mean, people like you and I, we have a problem, okay, because there's another step that they use to nail so-called conspiracy theorists, and that is to refer to things that, I mean, at least I think is totally ridiculous, and that is something like flat earth. So they say, oh, so you're a flat earthist. That's not the only one. There are other ways in which they try and make you guilty of being a stupid conspiracy theorist by associating you by guilt by association with something else. And that I'm not saying that's an easy thing to deal with, because part of the thing I'm trying to do in my book is to say if you want to be serious, you have to take each individual case independently and think for yourself in each individual case. And sometimes it's not the false flag that you thought it might be. It is possible that, I mean, it's not false flags everywhere, all times. So you have to be able to know how to sort things out.
Yeah, and I'll just add, because we're at the end of this here, I've seen that myself. I've seen us be at 9/11 Truth rallies, and they send somebody dressed all goofy, like a dragon, to try to put out the idea that, oh, we're saying no planes hit the World Trade Center. Of course that's a ridiculous notion, but they want to associate us with that, so they deliberately send people out there to associate us with that, and then they try to play this little mind game with you saying, well, how do you know? And look at that. And I always just say this. We want to be open-minded, because we've been accused of being crazy people for talking about physics and common sense, but you don't want to be so open-minded that your brain falls out. And
right.
So I always say, they'll say, well, who are you to say that this can't be? Well, I'm me, and I'm the one who makes the decision for me, and I think it's ridiculous, and I'm not going to entertain that. That goes for
yeah.
flat earth nonsense and no planes at the World Trade Center nonsense and whatever other nonsense they want to invent and throw at me. I don't got to explain it. If it doesn't make sense to me, then it's thrown out. That's just the way it is. That's how you deal with it. Sir, how can people get their hands on your book if they want to read more of it?
Okay, that's a good question. Unfortunately, for the 1 year, it's going to be in a hardcover only. It's very well done by Brill Press. That's the Dutch B-R-I-L-L publishing house. It's in Holland. Of course, they distribute, of course, in the United States. But the problem is it's $160, even if you get a discount. However, 1 year from now, Haymarket Books from Chicago will be putting it out in paperback, and I'm hoping it's like $20 or $25 or $15, something like that. So I can only suggest that if you don't have the money or you don't want to pay that much money, that you can try and either wait or go to the library or, I don't know, something like that.
All right, well, if you're listening in the archive, go ahead and check the date on this, and if it's been more than a year, check out and see if that paperback is out now. And, sir, thank you so much for coming on 9/11 Freefall today and sharing your insight.
Thank you both so much for inviting me. I enjoyed it.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, and every other Sunday night on BBS Radio at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele. So have a great week. Good luck.